So a few months ago, Cartoon Queen Carol and I did a podcast where we talked about apologies, all kinds of different apologies, and whether certain cultures apologize more than others, at least verbally. Apologies take all kinds of forms, of course. We concluded that verbal apologies, the act of saying sorry, or words to that effect, they were particularly frequent in the UK, sorry about that, Canada, and Japan. And that verbally, at least, they weren't nearly so frequently used in China. Now, that's got nothing to do with whether people are actually any more apologetic in Japan than they are in China. You could make the argument that they're not. Well, in the pod today, we're going to focus on Chinese apologies. People apologizing for terrible things that they did on behalf of an ideology that incited cruelty. Or maybe they just didn't like someone and use the ideology to tap into their own inner cruelty. Either way, in their apologies, they're not blaming the ideology itself. They can't. The Communist Party was the owner of that ideology, and they're still in charge, albeit without that particular doctrine. So, rewind to 1966, which is when the Cultural Revolution kicked off. It went on for a decade. It turned the country and the Communist Party leadership, it turned them upside down. There were purges, there were denunciations, there was mob violence, attacks on intellectuals and landowners, and on anyone perceived to be the allies of intellectuals or landowners. This destroyed the lives of countless millions of people. Now, all these years later, some aging Chinese, they're looking back at their own actions during that time, and they're personally and very publicly apologizing. Here's the Big Show's Matthew Bell.
The Cultural Revolution is still too politically taboo for real public debate in China, but on the outskirts of Beijing, you can visit a theme restaurant called Red Classic that celebrates the era of revolutionary fervor. Performers dressed up like Red Guards chant political slogans and sing patriotic songs from the Cultural Revolution. Long live Chairman Mao, they yell. And they even put on a skit in which poor villagers publicly humiliate their landlord, a hated class enemy. It's all good, kitschy fun, as long as you don't think about it too much. Some Chinese people would look at the scene here and find it pretty disturbing. That's 67-year-old Chen Xiaolu speaking with me at his home in a high-rent district of central Beijing. Chen says China has not yet learned the lessons of the Cultural Revolution. In those 10 years of chaos, he says, China lost sight of the rule of law and respect for human rights. Chen says people need to remember that for the sake of China's future. Chen's words have some weight. He's the son of Grand Marshal Chen Yi, a comrade of Mao himself and the former head of the People's Liberation Army. The general's son was also at the center of the storm when the Cultural Revolution kicked off in August 1966. The young Chen organized a meeting to criticize teachers and administrators at his elite Beijing school, and things got out of hand.
That event took place in the music hall, and the violence fightings happened on the stage, so all the students could see. And it was a very formal event, so the influence was extremely bad.
Chen says 10 or more people were beaten bloody by students that day. Later, the principal killed herself, and another teacher was beaten to death. Chen says he never took part in the violence directly, but he was a student leader from a prominent family, and that certainly inspired others to get involved.
This is similar to Pandora's box. Once you've opened the box and let the evil out, it's very difficult to put them back in. So when the evils are released, there was nothing I could do.
And how did you feel at that time?
I feel guilty.
Chen says that guilt stayed with him, and that's why he decided to make a public apology. This past summer, he and a few of his old schoolmates arranged a meeting with some of their teachers from the school, and Chen posted a letter online expressing his personal remorse. "I bear direct responsibility," he wrote. "I wasn't brave enough to stop the inhumane persecutions. It was a terrifying time." What moved Chen and his former schoolmates to apologize was looking at some photos from the year 1966 showing teachers being abused at their school.
这个主要的想法就是我们希望文化革命这一页
We hoped that the future generation should know what happened during the Cultural Revolution.
Others have come forward with expressions of apology, and that's not an easy thing to do in a country that places great value on saving face. A recent episode of a Chinese reality show called Please Forgive Me featured a 61-year-old man apologizing to one of his teachers.
我叫张吉英，张吉英来自哪里？来自德州平原。
The man named Zhang said he was 14 years old at the time. The Cultural Revolution was underway, and he took advantage of the chaotic situation by unfairly criticizing a teacher he didn't like. The teacher was roughed up by students, and then he lost his job. Zhang said he always felt guilty and wanted to make amends. Wu Di is the editor of an academic journal disseminated by email about the Cultural Revolution. It's called Memory.
我不认为这种道歉能够会对人们反思文化革命。
I do not think that these apologies will have a big impact on people reflecting on the Cultural Revolution or the Mao era. These kind of apologies lack reflection on why people were beating people.
Wu says the violence didn't just come from individuals behaving badly. It had a social and political context. The chaos of the Cultural Revolution, many would argue, was caused by a power struggle inside the Communist Party. And that's why China's current leaders don't want people digging too deeply into what really happened. Wu says people need to understand the era better. They need to talk about it, read about it, and debate what went wrong. That way, they can help make sure something like the Cultural Revolution never happens again. For The World, I'm Matthew Bell, Beijing.
So guess who's here right in the studio to talk about this?
Hello, Patrick.
The Big Show's Matthew Bell. Nice to see you, Matthew.
Great to be here.
Okay, so you have done this story about apologies. Does it give you a better sense of what it takes in China to apologize?
You know, I wish my Chinese was better so I could really see the way people have expressed themselves. My Chinese isn't that good. The other thing is that I didn't really get a chance to talk to and I was trying to find a sociologist, someone who could really kind of explain apology in the Chinese context to me. But I can say two things. One is I think it's good to keep in mind that these people, especially Chen Xiaolu and other people are sort of more prominent, that their apologies are really personal, that these are people coming out and saying, you know, I am sorry for what I did. And we heard the criticism in that piece from the editor that I talked to. And they're saying, you know, this is fine and good. They're apologizing for what they've done. But what this is not is something, an official apology in any way. Or these people are not coming out and saying the party was wrong, the policy was wrong, Mao was wrong. You know, that's sort of a red line politically.
Yeah, because I thought he was a little harsh, the scholar, suggesting that these were not heartfelt.
Yeah, I think maybe, I think he said, you know, fine and good, even if it is heartfelt, but let's look at the big picture here. And I think people like him, and I talked to others too in Beijing, who said that what would really be important is if the party started to look more honestly at its own mistakes and allow people even to discuss this in a more open, honest way.
Huh. Okay, so since that previous piece aired on The Big Show's air, there was another major apology in China. Tell us about that.
Exactly, and it came at an interesting time for me because I was working on another story and they ended up being related. But this was yet another daughter, this time, of a high-level former People's Liberation Army general who came out in a very similar fashion and made a public apology, said that she was sorry for the role that she played as a Red Guard leader at another Beijing elite school. This was a high school. And this was important because it was one of the first times that someone was criticized at one of these big criticism rallies, beaten up, and killed. And it came at a critical time in the beginning of the Cultural Revolution in 1966. Remember, this went on for 10 years. They think nearly 2 million people might have died in the political violence, and many more suffered in various ways. But this was a very high-profile killing. interestingly, when I was in China in November, I went and interviewed a documentary filmmaker who made a film about this very case. It's a stunning film. The filmmaker's name is Hu Jie. He lives in Nanjing. And you'll hear in this piece coming up, I went down to visit him, but that latest apology really caught my attention because I had been working on this story about Hu Jie and I had seen the film as well.
Well, let's give it a listen then.
An official radio broadcast from the start of the Cultural Revolution plays over archival video footage. There are scenes of mass rallies, big political posters, and of course, Chairman Mao. It helps set the historical context of Though I Am Gone. But the most powerful parts of the film, by far, come when filmmaker Hu Jie interviews the murder victim's widower on camera. The filmmaker asks the man, a photographer himself, "It must have been traumatic for you to take pictures of your wife's body." "Definitely," he says, "but I was determined," he goes on to say, "to record the truth of history." The film is devastating in its details. The 48-year-old deputy principal knew she was in danger, but she refused to flee Beijing because she did nothing wrong. Eventually, schoolgirls with the Red Guards set upon her with homemade weapons, including spiked clubs. Her widower got the news with a phone call that evening, so he gathered his four young children and his camera to go retrieve his wife's body from the hospital. The only time the widower breaks down in front of the camera is when he talks about being at home with his daughters and looking out the window. This is long after she's gone, but the family still finds itself waiting for the murdered woman, impossibly, to come home at last. It's the kind of simple human moment that makes Hu Jie's film so powerful. He's done it again and again by capturing personal stories of horror and suffering from China's recent history. Hu welcomed me into his family's apartment in Nanjing with a strong handshake and some green tea. He's not overly tall. His build matches his square, bearded jaw, and his eyes are warm and serious at the same time. Hu joined the army in 1977. He worked as a mechanic. Later, he got into the propaganda business. That led him to a civilian job with the state-run news agency, where Hu had access to a video camera. In his spare time, he kept the camera rolling, and eventually, that got him fired. In China, Hu told me, there aren't many films that tell the truth. So for the last 20 years, he's been on sort of a personal mission to rectify the situation. Hu has focused much of his energy on the period of Communist Party history from the late 1950s through the 1970s. Denunciations, purges, famine, and political violence characterized those years. Hu Jie's 2009 film East Wind State Farm profiles this woman, along with a handful of other survivors from a farm labor camp in rural China. These were Communist Party members who were purged in the late 1950s. Nearly 200 people died at this single location. Those who lived spent more than 20 years in the camp, and eventually they got an official pardon. The government admitted that they were wrongfully accused of being bad communists. In the words of one of Hu's interviewees, it was a historical joke. I asked Hu if he's taken much heat from Chinese authorities because his films so directly challenge the official history. China has passed through the stage of totalitarianism, Hu said. There are many more opportunities today. I never think of the risk, Hu said, and don't bother worrying what might happen to me later on. Hu told me he has been visited many times by state security agents, but they're always polite, he said, and nothing more serious has come from the visits. So in a sense, the government tolerates Hu's film work, but of course they don't make it easy for people to see it in China. Hu's films have been shown at independent film festivals in China, but not in theaters or on television, and attempts to distribute them online have been blocked. Karen Chen is with Degenerate Films, an American company that distributes Chinese titles online, including two of Hu's films.
For Hu Jie specifically, I think the difficulty, I would pinpoint it to his topics of his documentary films. You know, it's dangerous to look at the past. And I don't think it's a question of whether Chinese audiences want it or not. I think it's, you know, comes down to control of information, you know, control of the grand narrative.
Many stories will never be told. Hu said that only a handful of people in China are making independent historical films. And in his own experience, most people he approaches do not agree to speak with him. People are just too nervous about talking on camera and taking the risk of getting into trouble. But the ones who do tell their stories, Hu says, these people are real heroes. They suffered through so much horror and violence, Hu said, and then they recounted those experiences honestly and calmly. Hu explained that if he never made these documentaries, no one would know how these individuals lived through such tragedy with resourcefulness and energy and a sense of human dignity. Hu said he finds these personal stories inspiring and that others will too. For The World, I'm Matthew Bell, Nanjing.
You can see an excerpt from Hu Jie's documentary, also photos from the Cultural Revolution, and a video of that Cultural Revolution theme restaurant Matthew visited in his first report. They're all at pri.org/language. And I have a ton of new pods in the works, including another one coming up in the next day or so. See you then.